This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Pride Monday, the day before the 4th of July. Tonight on Queer Voices, David Elliott will be calling us from Washington to update us on what's going on up in Washington. Then Sally Huffer will be calling, she'll be here, talking about the Montrose Counseling Center, foster care program of the GLBT youth, and SPRI program for GLBT older adults. Then Mitchell Kateen will be discussing the Lawrence versus Texas Supreme Court decision. And that happened 3 years ago this past week. So that would be a real interesting
June 26th, last Monday,
where we come from here. And then Tim Brookover will be talking about community center stuff and the queer bingo coming up, which has been an incredible success from all that I hear.
If you haven't been there, you need to go.
And also, I believe Ray Hill will be joining us to give us some updates on stuff. All that's coming up on this edition of Queer Voices. This is Jack Belinsky,
Jennifer Redé,
and Greg Chapman.
And David will be calling in shortly to, I guess, bring you up to date on some stuff. We are post-Pride, which is certainly good for me because I certainly get to catch
you
up on things.
You have more time now, don't you?
Yes, and that means we get back to politics. Of course, politics is always in season, and this
That's
Wednesday.
That's a nice segue. You know that the GLBT Political Caucus is on Wednesday night, 7 o'clock, down at 3400 Montrose. Suite 207. You need to come out if you haven't ever been. You need to get involved with the workings of the political ins and outs of the city.
And who will be the speaker?
It'll be Ellen Cohen this week. And we're supposed to have a couple of visitors, Peter Brown. And he said he'd bring a guest.
Okay. And this Sunday, the Equality Texas and Family Pride Coalition offers a free outspoken family training. And this is basically a media training class, how to deal with the media, which we've been doing somewhat of a good job here, but we always can learn more about it. And it's free, and it's really easy to get involved in that. You could actually, there's a link here, but the way to register, it's like from 11 till 1 or 2, and it's going to be held at Bering United Methodist Church. It's from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. Actually, as I see it here in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
If you're interested in it, they're actually going to provide lunch. You can register by calling 202-331-2070. That's 202-331-2070.
May I use that as a segue into July 10th? I've got a guest coming on, a reporter from Fox 26, on answering questions on media and how the media handles the GLBT community.
Well, and speaking of that, there was a very good op-ed piece in the Chronicle yesterday.
Oh, I saw that. It was wonderful.
Stories about gays deserve to be in the mainstream. And we'll be talking about this a little bit later when Ray Hill shows up. But on the line with us now is David Elliott. Good evening, David. Good evening, David.
Okay. I saw that, and I thought it was rather interesting. You know, once upon a time, they wanted to throw us in the mainstream of a river most of the time. But now, did you see the article at all, Greg?
You know, I think I did read the article yesterday, but I'm trying to remember what it was about. But I think the gist of what's happening now is that, you know, stories about people who are gay, lesbian, or transgender, it's not exotic like it used to be. It's becoming more normal.
It's new. It's just regular news.
It's just regular news.
Sensational news. That was the word I was looking for.
Right.
It's not sensational anymore. And unless it happens to be some other tabloid of some kind.
And I think that just shows how far we've come that, that, you know, we're just people like everybody else.
We always have
been. Right, we always have been.
It's nice to be noticed by the rest of the population.
Exactly.
All right, we're going to try David again. David, are you there?
I'm here, Jack. Can you hear me now?
Absolutely, yes.
You know, it's like one of those cell phone commercials. Can you hear me now?
Or, more or less, are these calls being tracked?
Oh, well, you know, that's another topic for another call. You know, we could do a whole hour on that.
Yes, absolutely. So what's up and what's going on up in Washington?
Well, Jack, I'd like to start out by asking you a question, if I may. Okay? We know that we have a big election coming up. The election is 4 months and 1 day from today. Just 4 months and 1 day. But I got a question for you. Why are elections important?
Well, elections are very important as long as our votes do count and those machines actually register our votes, which we're starting to question these days. But they're very important because that's our voice. And it's just amazing that as much as we've been repressed by Washington and Austin, that our people don't go out and vote in better percentages.
But, Jack, let me bring it down to an even lower level, okay?
Okay.
And I'm going to put you on the spot right now, my friend. Tell me four issues that you're interested in, okay?
Well, I'm interested in a lot of issues, not just GLBT issues. I'm interested in the environment. I'm interested in health care. I'm interested in equality. And what else am I interested in? I'm interested
the deficit.
The deficit, yes, absolutely.
Okay,
and the war.
So you can understand how those four issues, LGBT equality, the environment, the deficit, health care, are going to be determined by who controls Congress after these November elections, right?
Right. And with the recent Supreme Court decision that pretty much keeps in effect the way the districts have been rigged here in Texas, it makes it a little bit more difficult.
Indeed. And Jack, you know, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about why elections are important before I get to, you know, the hot off the presses news that I have for you this evening.
Okay.
New polling information. And, you know, I want to make sure that the listeners out there understand that what is about to perhaps happen this November is extremely important, extremely beneficial.
Yes.
Great for progressive politics in Houston, in Texas, and in the United States. And Jack, what I'm leading up to here is we have some brand new polling information. We actually have a couple of polls, one from Time Magazine, another from the Los Angeles Times, and the new polling information tells us that there is an excellent chance that the Democrats are going to take over the House of Representatives this November. The poll found, this one by the Los Angeles Times, that registered voters favor Democrats over Republicans by 49% to 35%. And that's when voters were asked in their particular districts who they intended to vote for. Get this, Jack. 54% of voters overall want to see Democrats control Congress, while only 34% prefer the Republicans stay in power. That is a 21% margin. We have never, ever seen a margin like this in the modern day history of political polling. Democrats have opened up a 16-point lead on the question of which party is best equipped to tackle the nation's most urgent challenges. Democrats, for example, who have long enjoyed a edge on issues like health care and the economy, now find themselves on top when it comes to the Iraq war, when it comes to ethics, when it comes to immigration even. Issues where Republicans had been ahead or where the public was pretty evenly divided. And, you know, Jack, there are a couple of interesting quotes that some of the people who were polled gave to the Los Angeles Times. And I'm just going to share a couple of these with you, if I could.
Sure.
There was one guy, actually, who was polled out of Texas, a guy by the name of John Gavin, an 85-year-old retired life insurance agent from Wichita Falls. He said, quote, "It was Republicans who used to be fairly moderate and fiscally conservative. Now they are spending money like drunken sailors."
Absolutely.
And he went on to say, "I believe they are selfish, greedy people. Not that we don't have that in the Democratic Party, but they deserve their chance to get in there and try to do better." And another person who was quoted was a gentleman by the name of Bill Antonetti. He's a 60-year-old veteran from Manchester, Connecticut, former Republican. He says, quote, "At first I agreed with the war, but then the report started coming out about our intelligence being wrong. And now it is, here it is, 2006, and we've got soldiers getting blown up and dying for nothing. I served in Vietnam, and this war is starting to look like Vietnam."
Absolutely.
And this gentleman went on to say that he's worried about being able to pay for gasoline, heating oil. Remember, he lives in Connecticut where it's really cold, right? Not right now, but in the winter. He's worried about being able to pay for prescription drugs. And, you know, he's dependent on his wife's income and the $1,300 he receives each month in Social Security benefits, disability benefits. And he says that Republicans are only there, quote, "just for their rich friends," unquote. He says, quote, "You look at the tax cuts. All that money goes to the wealthy. People like me haven't gotten anything." And so, Jack, what I'm here to tell you tonight is the Republicans are running out of time with only 4 months and 1 day to go until the November elections. But perhaps more importantly, they might be running out of terrain. What issues are they going to try to argue to turn this thing around? They tried the federal marriage amendment. You remember that, the anti-gay marriage amendment. It went nowhere. They tried the flag-burning amendment last week. It went nowhere. They can't get their ranks together on immigration. They can't come together on any single issue that seems to be important to the American people. And so, while it would be foolhardy for one to predict the outcome of the November elections 4 months out, one wonders how it is exactly that the Republicans are even going to get back into the game and be competitive this November.
Well, there's one, you know, we look at these polls and we say how much the Republicans are not liked. However, there was a very good quote in the Times a couple weeks ago in some op-ed piece about how the Republicans can't govern and the Democrats can't get elected. Also, the reality is that most people don't like Congress, but they do like the person who represents them. And most of these districts in this country are rigged so that the incumbent has an incredible advantage of staying in office.
And I think we've already seen a trial run of what the Republicans would like to do with the Trump up of the Sears Tower episode, where they really played that up like it was an imminent threat. And, you know, it turns out we have a bunch of people that, you know, had no weapons, had no bombs. Only one had even been to Chicago. Yet they present the story with this big conference in Washington like they stopped some intimate threat, and it helps stir up fear.
Well, you know, that's a very interesting point. I'd like to go back, if I could, to the point that Jack just made about people's representatives in Congress, you know, people favoring their representatives, and so maybe these polls don't mean that much. I've been looking at polling numbers from 40 to 50 congressional districts, contested elections across the country.
Okay.
And what I'm finding is blowing my mind. It is completely blowing my mind. Republican after Republican after Republican after Republican who should be polling, these are members of Congress, incumbents, who should be polling somewhere from the mid-50s to the mid-60s, instead are polling from the low 40s to the upper 40s. I have never, ever in my approximately 25 years of following politics have never seen such a climate for change. Now, is it going to happen? You know, the Democrats need to pick up 15 seats in the House of Representatives in order to capture control. Is it definitely going to happen? It is too early, my friends, for us to say that it is definitely going to happen. Is it probably going to happen? based on everything that is out there, all of the numbers that are out there, everything I'm seeing on paper, yes, it is probably going to happen. The Democrats are probably going to capture the U.S. House of Representatives in November.
Well, that would certainly be great because the country just keeps getting more in debt. The environment's just in terrible shape. And I don't know if you got to see the Al Gore movie.
Jack, I'm going to. I haven't seen it yet. There are so many movies right now.
Yes,
I want to see. I
yes.
want to see the war tapes. I want to see War to Guantanamo, and I definitely want to see the Al Gore movie.
Well, and I got to see the movie, which is The Inconvenient Truth, over the past week, and it is a documentary, so it's not like the most exciting action movie, but actually it's pretty good. It is pretty, and it's mostly a lot of things that we probably already know, being activist, but there are things that we don't know, that he puts it all in perspective. And, you know, I'm glad that people are seeing this movie.
And Jack, even though it doesn't have any political theme at all to it, can I recommend another movie to you?
Oh, go ahead, yes.
And you'll like this, my friend, because you do radio, right?
Yes.
This movie is a Prairie Home Companion.
Yes, it is very good. And this past Sunday, the local PBS station ran a live on tape telecast of the previous Saturday's live radio broadcast of Prairie Home Companion. And the movie, although there's some added plot to the movie, is a lot like what a real radio show is.
Well, I didn't. I'll be honest with you, Jack. I didn't even want to go and see it. My partner kind of convinced me to, and I said, "Well, okay, you know, this will make you happy." And I loved it. I just loved it.
Well, and I loved the bit between Meryl Streep and Lily Tomlin, where they play sisters. And an Altman movie, they have all these layers of people talking over each other. And it was just a great scene because they're both going on and talking about a particular thing that happened in their life. And it was just great. And then there's also the sort of behind the scenes of what a radio program's like, that you'll be talking about something else and all of a sudden you got to go live on the air and then you change what you're talking about.
You have to change gears.
Yes.
And along that note, Jack, I know I only have a minute or two left, but I was wondering if I could tell you about one breaking news event that happened that affects Texas in the last week.
Okay.
Jack, you know that last November and December, the Houston Chronicle published a two-part series basically saying that a man named Reuben Cantu, who was executed by the state of Texas in 1991, I want to say, was in fact probably innocent of the crime. You remember that, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Jack, last Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, the Chicago Tribune published a three-part investigative series saying that it's happened again. This time involving a man named Carlos de Luna out of Corpus Christi, who was executed way back in 1989. Not only did the Chicago Tribune series point out that this guy was probably innocent, but they actually pointed to the guy who had confessed to committing the murder.
Well, I guess innocence has nothing to do with the death penalty here in Texas, which is very, very sad. And as we segue, what is your day job, David?
Well, conveniently, Jack, my day job is that I'm the communications director for the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. You can find our website at www.ncadp.org.
David, well, thank you for joining us. David Elliott joins us from Washington on the first Monday of every month. And even though it's a holiday eve, I appreciate you being there and talking to us here in Houston.
Thank you, Jack.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
You walk in circles, you point to pretty things, and you take no notice of this. If you just understood, took time to question everything, you might see how much you miss. Everything that's real,
is Ellis, Everything That's Real.
Okay, go. And we have now Mitchell Kateen, who was the first attorney on the Lawrence versus Texas case on, it came down, the actual Supreme Court decision came down June 26th, 3 years ago, 03, wasn't it?
That's correct.
Well, welcome to our show.
Thank
welcome
you.
To Queer Voices. And I'm Jennifer Renee. You were the very first. So for people that don't know the whole story, I've heard a lot of it.
Okay.
So, but let's just assume that everybody out there, the three people are listening tonight because everybody else is out having a party time. What happened that day that they walked in to your office?
Well, actually, at first I got a telephone call. And I got a telephone call from Lane Lewis,
mm-hmm.
who said that two men had gotten arrested and for having sex. And so I thought, okay, well, let's see, were they in a park? Were they in a car? Were they on drugs? Were they drunk? Were they, what was going on? Because I get crazy calls all the time. And he said, no, they got arrested in their house. And I really didn't believe it at first. I really didn't. And then I got Lane faxed me some information, and it was true. And so shortly thereafter, John Lawrence and Tyrone Gardner came to my office, and we had a meeting where we talked about it, and it was really different for a lot of law students and people. They don't understand from the beginning why we didn't work to get them acquitted. People say, well, how'd the police come in? Did they have a search warrant? Was it legal? Why didn't you argue the facts? And as
I would ask that same question.
Sure. As law students, they start questioning the case. And a very, very significant point from the beginning is that John Lawrence and Tyrone Gardner had to understand and agree that they would basically not dispute anything that the police said by pleading no contest, and that they would probably lose because we live in a state of Texas that's very conservative. All of the judges, or most of the judges, are conservative Republican people. And we have a law that makes it a crime, and we had a Supreme Court decision at the time called Bowers v. Hardwick,
yes,
that said gay and lesbian people were an exception to the United States Constitution. So you put all of that together, and also another factor.
Is that separate but equal thing?
No, we were not equal.
It was separate and unequal. Oh, okay.
Absolutely.
Just trying to check. I thought I'd heard that somewhere before.
No, at the time.
So it was the unequal part that I missed. Okay.
Prior to 3 years ago, gay and lesbian people were the exception to the United States Constitution. So if you can imagine being arrested, put into jail for overnight or 2 days, and going to a lawyer and being upset, because John Lawrence and Tyrone Gardner were upset how they were treated and that they were arrested and put in jail for having sex. To go to a lawyer and the lawyer say, well, we'll help you, but you're probably going to be found guilty, and there's probably nothing we're going to be able to do about it, but we're willing to try. We're willing to go forward and argue your case and hope and pray that maybe something will happen. But I can tell you honestly, from the beginning, no one ever imagined what the end result would be.
How did the decisions actually go at the lower level?
Okay, real quickly, it started at the JP Court. This Supreme Court case, civil rights case for gay and lesbian people, began at the JP Court. We pled no contest. They were found guilty and fined $250 each. Then we went to the county court at law, pled no contest. They were again found guilty, and they were fined $500 each. And actually, the judge and the prosecutor wanted to know, well, how much do you want us to fine you? So let's make it a little more.
Now, was this who was the prosecutor at that time?
Interesting question.
Well, that's why I asked it.
The answer is Angela Beavers.
Okay. Do you know Angela Beavers?
No, I don't. Tell me more.
No, I can't.
Okay, then we won't.
But that's why it's interesting that you asked that question.
We now have a secret from our audience.
We can't talk about that. Angela Beavers is a nice prosecutor, but we'll leave it at that.
Okay. There's trouble. It's just the three of us.
We appealed to the county court at law, to the 14th Court of Appeals, and to our surprise, we won. We won because Texas has an Equal Rights Amendment. The federal government does not. Although Congress passed it, the states never ratified the Equal Rights Amendment to the United States Constitution. But Texas voters did pass an Equal Rights Amendment that says you can't treat people differently because of their sex. And the three-judge panel decided that the only difference between why these people were arrested and if they weren't was their sex. And that means it's sex discrimination, and that statute is unconstitutional. And it almost stopped there. But what happened was, coincidentally, the Republican Party was having their state convention, and they called for the removal of these judges, the two judges that declared the statute unconstitutional. And in the legal process, what happened was, is the 14th Court of Appeals, that's made up of 9 judges, all decided that this case was too important to just let 3 judges decide it. So they said, we're going to throw that decision out, and we're all 9 judges going to decide this case. And thank goodness they did, because they all then decided, and then it was 2 judges who were for us were the minority, and the other 7 judges ruled that it was constitutional. And then we appealed to the United States Supreme Court.
Right. Now, it was Rosenthal, the prosecutor at that time?
He was the district attorney.
He was the district attorney who took it to the, who appealed it, right?
Well, we actually appealed it. He was, because we lost after it was reversed.
Okay.
And we went to the United States Supreme Court, and quite frankly, we never really imagined they would take the case. So many cases are important that get turned down. I wasn't even licensed in the Supreme Court. I had never visited the Supreme Court of the United States, because who are I? I'm a real estate lawyer. Yeah. So
I saw it on TV once.
Yeah. Well, anyways, I quickly got licensed there and learned where it was, and John Lawrence and I traveled there, and it was wonderful.
Now, do you have any idea of the history behind why it was accepted by the Supreme Court? I mean, they have reasons. They have hundreds they don't even look at twice. Why did this one just suddenly jump to the top of the stack?
Well, I think
the best guess
is that, and this will give us some indication of what's happening with marriage right now, is that the Supreme Court takes cases after the state courts have had enough time for these issues to percolate, and where you get different states having different opinions. And so if you jump quickly 3 years ahead to where we are now, where marriage is being battled in New Jersey, New York, California, the state of Washington, Massachusetts, Vermont, that's what's supposed to happen. The Supreme Court's not supposed to jump in a fight before the country's really ready for it. And the way the country gets ready for it, and that's why the constitutional amendment did not pass out of Congress, is the congressman said, hey, let's let the states deal with this for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's too early to jump in and make this discriminatory, hateful amendment to the United States Constitution. So my answer to your question is, they felt after 15 years of Bowers v. Hardwick being on the books, that we were ready.
It was time to look at it again. Okay. Well, then I remember and I had actually looked up the quote from Justice Kennedy. Pardon me for reading. When homosexual conduct is made criminal by the law of the state, that declaration in and of itself is an invitation to subject a homosexual person to discrimination.
Right.
Doesn't that also lend itself, if you carry that a little further, that the fact that you're limiting marriage? We've been discriminated against because we can't get married.
Well, that's true.
We're fantasy hope here.
Okay. What I'd like to do is sum up the entire Lawrence case in one sentence.
Okay. Okay? Please.
And then we can think about and talk about how do we take this one main point of the case and where is it going to go? Here it is. And that is, it is improper, based on the United States Constitution, to make some type of act criminal merely because of morality. Okay, said another way, moral disapproval of someone or something is not enough to make it illegal. Okay, that's what the whole case is about. And Justice Scalia was saying, yes, it is. Our laws are based on morality, and it's okay if we don't like this or that or this person, that it's okay. And the Supreme Court said no.
Yeah, I read that quote from him, too. It infuriated me when I read it.
Yeah, so if you really think about it, any law that doesn't have a real purpose, that has a real protection for some purpose, person or our economy or children, some true protection, not some made-up protection based on religion or a person's feelings, then this Supreme Court says that that's not enough. And so I'll give you some examples, because Lawrence is now being used in almost every day across the country.
You're anticipating my next question. You know, how has this over 3 years been, you know, has evolved in the other courts?
Well, different ways that people really haven't expected. And here are two examples. The first is a woman just recently in Virginia had sex with her boyfriend. They were not married, and he gave her herpes. In Virginia, there was a law that made unmarried heterosexual intercourse a crime. Fornication. That's what fornication is. So she sued her boyfriend for giving her herpes. She said, you can't sue me because what we were doing was illegal. And if you're engaged in an illegal act, you can't sue someone. Well, the Supreme Court of Virginia said, you're right. And you're right that we do have a law that makes fornication between unmarried people illegal. And that law, under Lawrence, only had a moral justification, and therefore it can't stand. Another example. There are many cities in this country that have ordinances that make it illegal for unmarried couples to live together. Okay? There are neighborhoods where if you're going to live together, you have to be related by blood or by marriage. There really are. I was reading about this in The Advocate.
Sounds right out of the 19th century.
And as I was reading, and this is common for a lot of places, and they enforce those laws, those ordinances. And I was reading in The Advocate this month, and it said, now based upon Lawrence, those ordinances that only had a moral justification can no longer stand. So Lawrence is being used all over where it's just morality. And I'm glad. I'm very excited.
I thank you for that. That really makes it a little better. My question seems insignificant to the way it's being used in other areas.
No, but this will eventually be applied to marriage. And I believe that with Lawrence as a foundation, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people will have a right to marry in the United States.
What even in states like Texas that have constitutional amendments now?
Correct. Because the United States Constitution is superior to state constitutions.
Oh.
Just like Colorado. Colorado and Romer v. Evans had a constitutional amendment.
Yeah.
Based on what you said, though, couldn't the law be used to, say, make prostitution legal?
No, because if you could say that the only justification for prostitution laws are morality, then you would win. But I think there's enough science to talk about drugs and
health, spread of disease,
and
right.
real public issues. And I'm just guessing, you know, the one of the first cases had to do with polygamy in Utah. And we were concerned that they were going to make a good case that polygamy, the only thing about polygamy is morality. But it was involving a man who was marrying 14-year-old young ladies, young girls.
Isn't that illegal to begin with?
Right. And that's why they threw it out, was, hey, this involves children. It's not about adults. But yes, prostitution, polygamy, lots of different things, gay marriage.
One of the things that the Republican Party in their current platform here in this state is they want to stop gay and lesbian adoption, as well as foster care and all.
Right.
And if they have their way, I'm sure that's what they'll try to do and get it through the legislature, hopefully vote against all Republicans, to protect our families. But the fact is, is that something that could transcend to that if they, in fact, pass something like that?
Are you saying, can Lawrence help oppose that?
Yes.
Yes, it could. In dealing with children, it's a very touchy subject, such as the Florida adoption ban and things along those lines.
Right, that's where
I think that it will, because in oral arguments, in fact, Justice Ginsburg was talking about, well, can gay and lesbian people adopt children in Texas? And Mr. Rosenthal said, well, I was very surprised sitting behind him. He said, well, I don't know. And she said, what do you mean you don't know? He said, I don't know if gay and lesbian people can adopt children. And quite frankly, my partner and I had adopted our kids. We have 2 4-year-olds, and I wanted to stand up with my pictures and say, well, Your Honor, yes, we can. We can. I'm sure I would have been thrown out and arrested for something. But he didn't know, and I knew. So, yes, the next battleground is really adoption and families and foster care. And
it all comes down to the makeup of the Supreme Court, because I would say right now there's 4...
Well, there's
justices,
five.
Well, I know, there's 4 justices that would be very hard against any decision that would be favorable to the GLBT community.
That's
so you
right.
really have, it's all down to Kennedy right now. And
well, we have Kennedy, Stevens, Ginsburg, and Breyer.
Right.
And
there's
5 that voted. There were 6 that voted in favor of Lawrence.
Right.
One of those was O'Connor.
Right.
And she's off. So we still have 5. We still have a majority. And the next president, because Stevens is 84 years old.
Pray for good health.
And Justice Ginsburg is not well. So the next president may have 2 more appointments from the very liberal side.
Mm-hmm.
It's so important this next election that we have a good president who will protect us.
Where's going to be our next battleground? I mean, we talked about these. Where do you see the next battleground?
You mean in the courts?
In the courts. What's going on outside? We've talked about here in Texas family issues, and we've talked about Lawrence and the underpinning of Lawrence's decision.
Right.
What about?
I think the family area. I think that for a lot of heterosexual people, the whole raising of families and children and the fear that they have about gay and lesbian people, although it's gotten better, I think that's. That's the area. But, you know, so many, we have a gay and lesbian family group here, and we all have kids, and Anise Parker, and everybody, and we all put our kids in HISD schools, and I remember our children, my partner and I, we put our kids at Wilson Elementary School over on Waugh and Fairview. And I went up to the principal the first day of school, and I said, we have a unique family, and I just want to make sure that our kids are treated properly and all that. And she turned to me, knowing what I was saying. She says, your children are not unique here. We've had gay and lesbian families here for a long time, and she kind of put me in my place. Okay, fine. That's all I need to hear.
Well, that was like when we were talking about the article that came out, you know, that we're slowly becoming, news about the GLBT community is becoming more mainstream.
Right.
And, you know, that's...
Well, here's an...
Stephen Kleinberg a month or so ago, who gave the report, the changing trends within the city of Houston concerning GLBT issues and GLBT acceptance. So from your perspective, are you seeing that change evolving into the courts? Or into...
Well, it's more the courts are a reflection of society.
Mm-hmm.
Here's on Father's Day. I don't know if you saw the Houston Chronicle on Father's Day, but they had a section of quotations of fathers.
Yes, I saw that.
And they quoted me. They quoted me. And here's the controversial question. Is in the quote, it's not what I said. I quoted my father. And I said that my father's lesson was, it's nice to be important, but it's more important to be nice. And it said... Mitchell Kateen, father of 2 4-year-olds. They didn't say gay father of 2 4-year-olds. And so the question
is that a reflection that we've advanced? Is that a good thing? Should they have said gay father of 2 4-year-olds so that people knew I was gay, or is it better that they just said father?
It shouldn't matter, really.
It shouldn't matter.
I think that's a good thing, really.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's my example of how far we've come. It's like, do they say Anise Parker, gay controller? No. Mm-hmm.
It'd be like saying, you know, this person, you know, pointing out that this person is black or Jewish or Hispanic. Mm-hmm. It's in some way, it's a little bit demeaning, you know.
Yeah, well, and I can only speak for the transgender community. I mean, all we want to be is addressed and respected for who we are, who mm-hmm. we appear to you to be. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a woman.
Right.
You know, that's all that matters to me.
Well, that's an example of how far we've come, though. I think the Chronicle has see us as parents and as men and as women and as business people. And so I think we've come a long way, and it feels good, and it's fun.
Well, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
This has been great. We'll have to have you back again sometime if
okay.
you can ever come.
Maybe once a year for the 4-year reunion. We'll see
something
where we've
like
come.
That, or it's something new pop up. We'll have to okay. have you back. And thank you again. And this is Jennifer Nay. This is Queer Voices.
Buckle, t-shirt, strong arm next to delicate features. Fingers spread strong to push through hair. She had beautiful dyke ways. Don't ever change your beautiful dyke. I was running up the street, the film style still playing in my head. Faces moving past me like different kinds of herbal tea. She had beautiful dyke ways. But I didn't run out of breath all the way from Avenue C to Astor Place. And the streets were quiet and the steam was lit from behind. The streets were quiet and the steam was lit from behind. Summer night. Oh, hot, quiet summer night. She had beautiful dyke ways. Don't ever change your beautiful dyke ways.
Roy Roberts and Perfect. You're listening to Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee again. We've got with us Sally Huffer of the Montrose Counseling Center. Welcome. It's good to see you again.
I know. Back again.
Yes. And Greg sitting in with us tonight.
Yes, I'm here.
Say hello.
The
first thing, what have you got new for us today, tonight?
Well, I have a couple things that I wanted to talk about, but one of them really dovetails from your interview with Mitchell, which was an extraordinary interview. I really enjoy listening to him speak. I wanted to talk about our foster care program. We talked about it once before.
Oh, that is a segue, isn't it?
So that was one of the things that he was talking about. Now, ours is a little bit different because a lot of people look at foster care and they're looking to adopt young children. Mm-hmm. But we've got a population out there of kids who are being kicked out of their homes because they're gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender.
Mm, oh, yes. Quite the man. Yeah.
And so we've got this population. I mean, it's estimated that about 30% of the homeless street youth in Houston, not just Montrose, although this is an area where they tend to congregate, that 30% are GLBTQ. So we are looking for adults, either gay adults, GLBT, or GLBT-affirming adults who would be interested in becoming a foster parent to somebody who's being kicked out of their home, or perhaps somebody who's already been kicked out of his or her home because of their sexual orientation or gender
identity. Where are the kids coming from that you're talking about? They're coming to the counseling center?
Well, oftentimes they call the gay and lesbian switchboard because they're kind of at a loss, and maybe somebody has given them that number and they don't know where to go. Right now, their options are severely limited. A lot of them choose to couch hop, you know, go from friend to friend's house and stay on a couch. There's one place where they can go that's a residential center where they can go, but it is a faith-based agency. And so some of them choose to go there maybe for one or two nights, but they don't feel really welcome there. And so
they want to be saved.
Exactly.
from their lifestyle.
And so, you know, the last choice for many of them, and, you know, the scary thing is that some of these kids aren't being kicked out of their homes. They just think it's going to be safer to live on the street than it is to be in their home, where they may experience, you know, religious abuse, constant criticism.
Or
physical abuse, exactly. So,
how old are most of these kids? What's their age range?
Well, we're looking particularly at youth between the ages of, say, 12 and 18. Because we're going through a licensed foster care agency, anybody who's under the age of 18 is available for foster care. And so because this is going through licensed foster care, that we're partnering with them, all of the things that need to happen when you're going to go through that process of becoming a foster care parent, you have to go through that too. There's a screening process that the agency does. We at Montrose Counseling Center aren't going to do the actual screening because we're not the experts in that area.
Well, now, we were talking just briefly before this, and it was like you have about five, you need at least five more in the minimum range. What kind of person are, you know, we looking for? I mean, who are they? I mean, if there's people out here listening tonight that, you know, that sounds something I'd like to do,
Well, the most important thing that I need to emphasize is that we're looking for people who are looking into being foster care parents for the long term. This isn't just emergency foster care. This isn't just to help them get through the summer. This is a commitment that we're asking people to make to help these people who are in this circumstance. Now, we're not saying that they have to go through the whole adoption process. I mean, just like any kind of foster care program, they certainly can consider that down the road, adoption. But most of the youth are between the ages of 13 and 18, and we want to make sure that the adults who are interested in this understand that that's what they're getting into. The foster care agency is going to go through, you know, a training with them about issues that GLBTQ youth are facing, and then they provide a home study program, training and background checks, all those kinds of things, and then they do the actual placement. Then, as far as when we're ready to start placing the youth, and we already get phone calls from youth who are in these circumstances, and until we have people that have gone through this placement program through the licensed foster care agency, we can't place them. Right now, if somebody were to call the gay and lesbian switchboard and ask for help, we'd have to tell them that right now, you know, we'd say, do you have any friends where you can stay for the time being? Do you have any family members that might also be gay or might be accepting where you could stay for the time being? You know, there's one other option in Montrose, the Covenant House. They can go to that. But there is no other option for them. And we certainly don't want them to hit the streets.
Now, to find, you know, someone, are we looking for families to be foster care? We're talking about a couple or single individuals?
Couples or singles or people who already have children? It doesn't matter. They don't have to be gay. They can be gay affirming. PFOG parents could do this very easily if that's something that they're interested in.
That was one of the questions I didn't get to ask you last time you were here when we were talking about something similar, or was it the time before? Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. But, can a single individual who really, has a good stable household want to reach
absolutely
out and help?
Okay. Because single people can become foster care parents for non-GLBT youth. So this is, a program that is identical to that. We're just providing the matching service.
Okay.
So there was a study, it's about 16, 17 years old now, and I brought some information from it. It was by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services back in 1989. And at the time, Paul Gibson wrote that if GLBTQ youth are rejected by their families and unable to access support services, because let's keep in mind, just as an aside, that if you're not 18, you can't sign up for getting financial assistance or the gold card or getting food stamps or anything like that. If you're under the age of 18, you can't, without parental consent, sign up for social services.
And your parents may not give that to you because they've already thrown you out.
So many become, according to Paul Gibson, many become homeless, which increases their likelihood of engaging in survival sex, prostitution, I don't know if we need to define survival sex, but sometimes that's what somebody will have.
It's exactly what you think it is.
Yeah, having sex so that you can have a roof over your head tonight.
Exactly.
There is no exchange of money. And subsequently, there's an increased risk for HIV, other sexually transmitted infections. And this particular study said that these youth are also more at risk for alcohol and drug abuse, victimization, and suicide.
I can speak to all those.
Well, and, as you probably well know, we see a lot of this among the transgender youth, because for somebody that's transitioning at 17, 18 years old, trying to live their life, in that the gender identity and be authentic to themselves, they don't have the paperwork behind them to back them up, that their name has changed. Where can they get a job?
Well, the state of Texas doesn't help you with that either.
Exactly.
As a matter of fact, they put up all kinds of roadblocks to doing that.
Well, especially at that age. I mean, how is somebody going to accumulate enough money?
Even as adults, well, beyond that, age of adulthood, they still do that.
Of course. But if you don't even have the money to secure a lawyer or to go before a court or to even know that you can start asking those questions, where do you get your minimum wage job? Where do you start your life?
Basically, our culture is treating these people like throwaways.
Exactly.
And, they're not even 18.
Exactly.
Hey, that's just...
What else did... You said had something else that you wanted to talk to us about.
I do. It's at totally the other end of the spectrum.
It's the older people.
It's for people over the age of 60. We've talked about the Spry
program
before.
Yes, we have.
And we just recently started peer support groups, which is kind of like a drop-in support group for these. It's not counseling. It's a support group so that we're encouraging people to come in, drop in, talk about what issues they're facing. And we can't duplicate at the counseling center the wisdom that you get from talking to people that are your same age, that have gone through a lot of the same things, that have the same values that you have, and have had some common experiences. One of the things we talked about last time was, people of my mother's generation, they didn't talk about their problems. And so maybe sometimes it's easier just to have a place where you can go and be around other people your own age. And so we've started a few support groups. One meets on Monday evenings from 6 to 7:30 at the Counseling Center, and that's for both men and women.
Give us the information, the contact information. Ask you.
Sure. Back for the foster care program, you can become a foster care parent by contacting the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard, 713-529-3211. There's also some information about it on the Counseling Center website, which is www.montrosecounselingcenter.org. We also have some more information about Spry at that website.
Good. I'm sorry, but I wanted to make sure we got that out.
No, I appreciate that. So back to Spry. Spry stands for Seniors Preparing for the Rainbow for Rainbow Years, and we had a bunch of people at the festival trying to reach people. We even have a waiting list for people who are not quite 60 yet, who aren't quite eligible for the program, but as soon as they become 60, they want to. So we've started these peer support groups. So on Monday nights, we're hoping that it's going to be a drop-in kind of group. In order to attend the groups on Monday night, you don't have to meet with a peer counselor. You can just come. If you're over the age of 60, come to the counseling center between 6 and 7:30, and you can meet with other people, you know, who are over the age of 60, discuss what issues you're facing, whether it's, you know, housing issues, retirement issues, issues with adult children, whatever you're going through. There will be other people there to talk to about that. But then we've separated on Tuesdays. We've got a women's only group, which meets during the daytime from 11 to 12:30. And then we have a men's only group that meets from 4 to 5:30. And one of the reasons why we chose those times is because we felt like in the daytime from 11 to 12:30, when that gets out, if the people in the support group, the women in that group, want to go out and have lunch together, you know, if they
excellent
form some
social contact
and
as well.
To create some bonds with others. Because one of the things, you know, all of our research has shown us is that a lot of these people are facing isolation issues more than anything else.
And you don't have to be 60 to face that.
Exactly, exactly. So you know, we have that. And then the evening program gets out at 5:30. So if the guys want to go out and, you know, grab a bite to eat after their meeting, that's been set up too. So
now, is there a separate contact information for that, or can they all go to the website?
Well, the information about the new peer support program isn't on our website just yet, but it probably will be by Wednesday or Thursday of this week. If you can contact the counseling center at 713-529-0037. And you can press 0 to speak with somebody at the receptionist. This is also a joint program that we're doing with Legacy Community Health Services, and you can contact them at 713-830-3025.
Sally Huffer, Montrose Counseling Center, thank you again for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
This is Queer Voices.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky, Joan Devlin, J.D. Doyle, and Glenn Holt.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
If people are dying from AIDS, then they may as well die sooner than later.
Mr. Speaker, I move that leave be given to introduce the Homosexual Law Reform Bill.
It's going to destabilise the family unit, destroy this nation and democracy.
Come out now, be visible, be as gay and as lesbian as you can.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Daring, dangerous, and delightful pride parades circle the world. Arkansas's top court spanks the state's foster parenting ban. And sex laws and audio tape commemorate New Zealand's 20th anniversary of reform. Those stories and more this week now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm John Beaupre.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending July 1st, 2006. June Pride season peaked around the world this week. Celebrations are held to commemorate the Stonewall Rebellion in June 1969, when patrons of that well-known gay bar on Christopher Street in New York City's Greenwich Village fought back against a routine police raid, giving birth to the modern-day movement for LGBT equality. Bolstered by news that leading candidates for the 2007 French presidential election have softened their opposition to same-gender marriage, Thousands of equality supporters paraded in Paris on June 24th under the slogan, Equality in 2007. The issue made headlines when Ségolène Royal, the socialist presidential frontrunner, came out in support of same-gender marriage, an abrupt personal policy reversal to conform with her party's written platform. It is essential that everybody has equal rights and dignities and the chance to express themselves freely, Royal told the gay magazine Tattoo last week. Opening up marriage to same-sex couples is needed in the name of equality, visibility, and respect, she said. Royal's main conservative rival, Interior Minister Nicolas Sarkozy, then said he would ask well-known philosopher Luc Ferry to provide him with a report on the implications of marriage equality. According to a recent opinion poll, 60% of the French public support same-gender marriage. However, French mayors officiate at marriages and, with the notable exception of openly gay Paris mayor Bertrand Delanoy, they appeared less willing to embrace change. Some 12,500 of them, more than one in three, have signed a petition opposing same-gender unions.
Tens of thousands of spectators gathered where it all began, New York City, lining Fifth Avenue on June 24th for that city's annual Pride March. Intermittent rain didn't deter the crowd. The route bathed in an ocean of rainbows and colorful floats. The parade marked the first public appearance of singer Kevin Aviance, who triumphantly rolled down Fifth Avenue atop a circus-themed float, just weeks after being viciously beaten and having his jaw broken by four young men yelling anti-gay slurs. A few hateful homophobes will not set us back, said City Council Speaker Christine Quinn, who marched in the parade. She's the first woman and the first openly queer person elected to lead the council.
On San Francisco's Market Street the same day, a sea of festively dressed revelers looked on as marching bands, dancers, and floats bearing corporate logos streamed by in that city's annual Pride Parade. The Christopher Street West Parade in West Hollywood the week before also drew the usual large crowds to the weekend Pride Festival. Political signs and banners in those cities and elsewhere focused on marriage equality and stopping anti-queer violence.
Thousands gathered in Columbus, Ohio on June 23rd for that area's 25th annual Pride Parade. Protesters along the route held large signs reading, Homo sex is sin and God abhors you, while a boy in blue tie-dyed clothing held up another, two moms, two dads, too cool.
The largest demonstration of pride in the history of the world took place in Sao Paulo, Brazil, on June 17th, as nearly 2.5 million people turned out for that city's 10th annual parade. However, violence against sexual minorities remains alarmingly high in that country. At least 81 Brazilians were murdered in anti-queer hate crimes last year. The parade theme was, Homophobia is a crime.
Some 160,000 people hit the streets for the 28th annual Pride March on the same day in Mexico City. Organizers demanded equal rights and opportunities, legal recognition of queer families, and reform of the educational system to present LGBT people in a fair manner. The five-hour parade began at the Angel of Independence Monument and ended at the Zócalo, the huge square that is Mexico's political epicenter. Speakers at the post-parade rally included the president of the Mexico City Human Rights Commission and the director of the National Center for the Prevention and Control of AIDS. Pop singer Gloria Trevi also spoke, "You should not have to fight for your rights to acquire them or have them because you were born with them," she said. Trevi also performed her latest single, Todos Me Miran, or Everybody's Watching Me.
Police officials in the Croatian capital of Zagreb said that about 500 officers provided protection for some 250 Pride Parade participants on June 24th, which, unlike similar marches in some other Eastern European cities, was a peaceful event. As was the case at more violence-laden marches in Moscow and Warsaw recently, other LGBT activists from around the region participated.
About 10,000 people marched in Zurich's Pride Parade on June 10th, setting a new crowd record. The Swiss Info website reported that this year's parade was less outrageous than those of previous years, with most people turning up in normal, everyday clothing. A Pride spokesperson said that's likely a side effect of gays and lesbians becoming more integrated into Swiss society.
And some 250 people marched in the first ever Pride parade in Cork, Ireland on June 4th, according to a report in the Irish Independent newspaper. Although Cork has had a Pride festival for some 15 years, organizers believe the city only recently has become cosmopolitan enough to welcome a parade. The public really seemed to enjoy it, and we will definitely be extending it next year, said a Pride organizer.
It just seemed to go down a treat with people. In other news, Estonia's parliament has voted to increase protections for lesbian gay people. In a 62-18 vote on June 15th, lawmakers criminalized incitement of hatred or violence based on sexual orientation, among other specified categories. Violators face a fine or jail sentence. Another measure also banned discrimination based on sexual orientation. The author of the bills, People's Union MP Jacques Alik, said Estonia was lagging behind other European nations in protecting lesbian by gay people, and that now homophobia has been criminalized here as well.
In a unanimous ruling in the U.S. this week, the Arkansas Supreme Court overturned that state's ban on gay and lesbian foster parenting. The decision noted that the driving force behind the regulations was not to promote the health, safety, and welfare of foster children, but rather based upon the State Child Welfare Review Board's views of morality and its bias against homosexuals. The court concluded that there is no credible evidence that being raised by lesbian or gay people causes academic or gender identity problems, as the state had argued. Lame duck Republican Governor Mike Huckabee, whose term expires in 2007, immediately called on the legislature to enact a measure to void the high court ruling. But Rita Sklar of the American Civil Liberties Union, which litigated the case, said the court ruling itself could make legislation difficult to pass. She cited language in the ruling that said there was no connection between homosexuality and a child's welfare. Missouri officials dropped their appeal in a similar lesbian-gay fostering case earlier this month after passage of a measure that, among other things, repealed the state's sodomy law. That law had been cited as the primary basis for the fostering ban. The Show-Me state finally brought its law books in line 3 years after a U.S. Supreme Court ruling in a Texas case struck down all sodomy laws.
And finally, California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, facing a tough re-election battle this year, told a fundraising dinner for the West Coast chapters of the Log Cabin Republicans in Hollywood this week that he was proud to be on the same team as his gay GOP cohorts. His speech reportedly helped raise more than $100,000 for the gay Republican group. But both the governor and his supporters were silent about his veto of a marriage equality bill last year, the first such legislation passed by state lawmakers anywhere in the country. Schwarzenegger has also vowed to veto a bill passed earlier this year by the state Senate, even before it's been considered in the Assembly, which would require that LGBT people's contributions to history be taught in California's public schools. Schwarzenegger has signed bills increasing rights for same-gender domestic partners and strengthening hate crime protections. Some activists note, however, that the various domestic partner bills his GOP defenders point to would have been unnecessary had the governor signed the marriage equality bill into law. Schwarzenegger's Democratic opponent in the upcoming November election, State Treasurer Phil Angelides, has said he would sign such a bill. What does Arnold Schwarzenegger believe in beyond trying to save his own job? An Angelides' campaign spokesperson asked rhetorically about the governor's log cabin appearance. One day he is vetoing civil rights bills, and the next day this. Schwarzenegger was also this year's recipient of the Pink Brick Award, given annually by organizers of the San Francisco Pride Parade, to someone who has done the most to deny LGBT people their civil rights. Still smarting over his September veto of that marriage equality legislation, nearly a third of the 3,043 mail-in ballots made him the top vote-getter, well ahead of runner-up Concerned Women for America, a national right-wing Christian group that campaigns against LGBT equality. And that's not the only rebuke the governor has received. Organizers of Pride events in San Diego and Long Beach refused to publish the annual greeting and letter of appreciation that Schwarzenegger sent out last month ahead of this year's celebrations.
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 1st, 2006. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Rick Watts.
Good evening again. This is Jennifer May. I'm back. And we have in the studio with us now is Tim Brookover, past president of the GLBT Community Center and current board member. What's going on at the Community Center?
Well, good evening, both of you. It's always a delight to be here. There's a lot going on at the center these days. This is the 10th anniversary of the establishment of the Houston GLBT Community Center.
Oh, congratulations.
Thanks. Thanks. It's amazing. Actually, at the last board meeting, Don Hubbelt, one of the other long-serving board members, brought a clip from the Houston Voice from 1996 talking about some type of party or reception to announce the founding of the center that was held at the Magnolia Ballroom. And it was funny, even though that was only 10 years ago, a number of the people who were both mentioned in the article and who were photographed as a group were unfamiliar to everyone on the current board. We thought we were looking at each other asking, who are these people? So a lot has obviously changed in 10 years. But it's an exciting year. We have a number of really fun things that we do these days. I think the most prominent for a lot of people is Queer Bingo, which we started doing in December. It's on the third Saturday of every month.
And that'll be July 15th this month. And
I got the date wrong earlier.
Yeah, it starts earlier. About what time does it start?
The doors open at 5, and games begin at 6. It's at 1415 California, which is the building that many people know as the old Sonoma restaurant building, where also the Pride Houston has its headquarters. Doors open at 5. A lot of people start arriving early. A lot of those dedicated bingo players, they start coming in at 5, 5:30 to set up their cards and do all the preparation work. And then we begin the games at 6. It generally lasts till about 9 o'clock. It's an entire evening of bingo, but also we have giveaways, door prizes. Cinnamon, a fantastic drag diva in our community, usually performs a little bit. We have a great time.
Now, don't you have themes each month?
We do. We have a theme every month.
Well, what's July going to be?
The theme for July is Hawaiian Queer Bingo. So break out those leis and grass skirts and caftans and muumuus and coconut shell bras and come on down.
You mean I might get laid this time?
But thanks, you'll be here all week. Absolutely, absolutely. I can guarantee that everyone who comes will get laid. I mean, that's a pretty bold statement.
I can guarantee it. That is.
It's a great deal of fun, and it's a fundraiser for the community center.
I was going to say that this is one primary source of funds for
absolutely,
the community center.
Absolutely.
So come out and you enjoy yourself. Plus, you're contributing to the betterment of the community center.
It is, and it's been very exciting for us. As I say, we started in December. It was a long process to establish because it's actually official bingo sanctioned by the Lottery Commission, and there's all kinds of paperwork and rules, and Christopher Bown, our president, did a great job at navigating those waters. And the folks up at the Dallas Lesbian and Gay Community Center have been tremendously helpful because they've had bingo for about 4 or 5 years, and it's tremendously successful up there, so much so that they can't even have it at their center, which is quite large. It's held at a theater. And they make so much money from that they have a full-time staff person that only handles bingo. And
We
can only hope. So they've been very helpful working with us. And one of the things that we took from them was the monthly theme. They have a monthly theme and said that really made it a lot more fun than just, pardon the expression, straight bingo. And so we do that, and it's a lot of fun. Some of us dress in costumes. Sometimes even some of the bingo players dress in costumes. This last month, the theme was disco bingo, and we had some of our folks, including Jennifer, dress in their best disco duds, and it was a lot of fun.
And you always usually have your boa, and you always look good in a boa.
Thank you, darling. I'm the one wearing the pink and the white boas.
Here.
I sell the special game cards, and you can always distinguish me by my boas. So that's a great deal of fun.
Well, at the community center, what other activities is there at the center?
Well, some other activities. Of course, we always provide low-cost office space and meeting space for a number of organizations in the community. But then we also offer some of our own, some programming for the community. One thing that's coming up soon on August the 12th is the working group this is very long, working group that is part of, that is a follow-up to the Conference on Houston's LGBTI Future that was held in June 2005. A number of individuals and organizations in the community presented resolutions at that event that was held in conjunction with Empower to create a gay, what is called now the gay agenda, resolutions about politics and family life and sports and civil rights, and the community center decided starting in January that we would hold some regular meetings on an informal basis to kind of follow up on the conference, because really nothing other than the document had been done. Phyllis Fry edited a wonderful document called The Gay Agenda with all these resolutions, but nothing had really transpired since then. On a community basis. And so we started holding meetings in January, and then in May the group, the working group, decided to take that to a quarter, on a quarterly basis. We had a meeting in May. We'll have another meeting in August, August 12th at the community center, which is a Saturday, 1 to 3. Very informal. It's really turning into kind of a community-wide networking group, which really we don't have in this community. There are a lot of times when we come together as a community or as community leaders or community activists around events or activities, but there's not really a time that we can all come together when there's really no agenda.
What is the gay agenda?
Well, the gay agenda, which is definitely worth taking a look at, this is the document that resulted from the conference on Houston's LGBTI Future that was held in June.
And if anyone's interested in actually reading it, you can go to Pride Houston, and it is a, you can click over and pull it up and print it out.
It's at pridehouston.org, and it's also at houstonglbtcommunitycenter.org. And Phyllis Fry took all the resolutions, I think there were almost 80, that were presented on this day, and compiled them into a single document and titled it, rather cheekily, I think, The Gay Agenda.
Well, it was that those people used to accuse us of having that secret agenda. And now they can go to a website and see it.
And Phyllis said, okay, well, then we're going to have one. And it's very interesting, as I say, there are resolutions on all different areas of life, from politics to just to youth, healthcare,
sports,
arts, faith and religion. It makes for some very interesting reading, and a number of the groups that presented resolutions are working independently on the resolutions that they presented. The Montrose Counseling Center being a great example. Some of the things that they presented as resolutions, they are putting into practice.
Well, and Team Houston,
and
too,
Team
came
Houston.
Right out of Section 10 or something
right.
like that.
Team Houston, which is the group that has organized to help people who are going to the gay games and the out games. So, yes, I mean, there's a lot of work that's already been done. But the community center is trying to help facilitate where we can, the continuation of some of that work. And then also, as I say, really help develop this group as a networking group for the community. We always we invite a couple of groups from the community to come and speak, make a presentation. You did, Jennifer, the last time talking about the caucus. And then we've also started talking about working on some projects under the community center umbrella. One of those being a media training. For
now, that's coming up, isn't it?
Well, there's a media training in July.
Okay, there's one coming up in Baring that we talked about earlier.
That Equality Texas and the Family Pride Coalition are doing.
So when is the community center having one?
That will be in the fall. The one that is in July, which is terrific, is really involving family issues.
Okay.
GLBT family issues. The media training that we're having in the fall is really directed at organizations within our community that want to learn more about how to get good press or how to get press. And it's not just going to be limited to family. It's anyone who wants to learn about how to write press releases, how to send press releases to the media, how to talk to the media, you know, how to deal with a crisis. So it'll be a little be more broad-based. We haven't set a date for that. It's definitely be in September or October. So keep a lookout for that.
Okay, one quick thing. Now that we've got everybody interested in the community center, those of you who don't know where it is...
We are currently located at 3400 Montrose in the Sky Bar building, suite 207. We're on the second floor.
Now, if I want to find out more information, how do I do that?
You can look at our website, which is HoustonGLBTCommunityCenter.org. Or you can also call us at 713-524-3818.
Tim Brookover, GLBT Community Center, thank you again for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
For Queer Voices.
We had a wedding, a ceremony, no movie between Asia.
This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, Queer Voices.
You're not my judge,
okay,
or my jury. Your friends could find out. That's why you worried your image could be spared. Why don't I care? How can I be so unfair? My mind is twisted and you can't explain. How can I live this forsaken way? But I have a news flash for you. I'm never, never, never gonna choose, 'cause it's not contagious, just a little outrageous for you. But it doesn't mean I have any less of a right to be who I am, and I demand to be free from your judgment. Give me the respect. Don't like what I do. Dignity isn't measured by you. Homophobic blues. So what am I supposed to do about you? I thought I made it clear. I'm not gonna cry or shed a tear. You say I'm always wanting it, but I'm not gonna take that long, long trip. I'll live my life as I decide. I'm never, never, never gonna hide. I thought it was crazy. Just a little outrageous for you. But it doesn't mean I have any less of a right to be who I am. And I demand to be free from your judgment. Give me the respect. Don't like what I do. Dignity isn't measured by you. Homophobic blues, a wife, two kids, and a mortgage due. You're threatened by difference outside your picket fence. You can't understand why I'm not on the defense. You say I'm always wanting it, exposing your family to all this shit. Well, you don't want them to see or know who I am. Come on, brother, let's change this plan. You're just like me. Oh, can't you see? You strive every day for a little dignity. Just a little outrageous for you. But it doesn't mean I have any less of a right to be who I am. And I demand to be free from your judgment. Give me the respect. Don't like
like what I do. Dignity isn't measured by you.
And that was the Three Marys and Homophobic Blues. With us this evening, Ray Hill. We're sort of going to do a year-end wrap-up. July starts a new year for me.
Yeah, right. For you, this is
right.
This is
sort of my Christmas and New Year's type of thing.
Fiscal year kind of thing.
Right. Actually, the fiscal year ends in August, and we start a new year in September. But for the work part of it, it's sort of over.
The panting is over.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hey, actually,
well, congratulations. You did a wonderful job. I smuggled a couple of Canadians. I don't know much about Canada. All I know about Canada is what I learned watching South Park. And and so, but they brought a Canadian. She's probably listening tonight, actually.
Well, Canada has an excellent radio network called the CBC, which is government-owned but not government-controlled. Mm-hmm. How smart of them, like the BBC. They actually let it independent, although every once in a while the politics gets involved in that. But they run two radio networks, and they run television networks, and they have some excellent stuff on there.
And she's exercising all of that. In my case, she's doing a documentary on the prison show,
and
a radio documentary.
Who is this?
Her name is Allison Armstrong, and she's got a pretty good rep. I Googled her and found out some of the things that she had done. She's a filmmaker, and she did a lot of media production, and then dropped out to have a family. She got a family. They grew up, and she's about, teenagers in the house driving her crazy, so she decided to escape. And so she escaped and came down here to do a documentary on Joel Osteen.
Oh.
And so she went to the go-to guy about religion around here. It's Bill Martin out at Rice University. And Bill Martin said, well, yeah, Osteen's interesting, but why are you talking to me? I know an atheist gay activist that actually likes Joel Osteen, and I think his story is... So my other agent, Bill Martin, at... Professor Emeritus at Rice University sent her to me, and she carried that tape back, fell in love with it, and so she's back down here to do she can do the video documentary on the Woodlands Tin Story.
Oh, wow. Well, she was also covering Hurricane Katrina stuff.
And she's also covering the Angela case.
Wow.
Angela Yates case. Mm-hmm. So she's doing whatever. Those cases are paying for her way down here, but she's got, she did a promo piece on me called Ray Hill, the Gayest Man in Texas, which is just absolutely, I've never looked so good. I still don't look that good. I didn't look that good when I was 18 years old. She's just a weasel with a camera. It's just amazing.
Well, you just charm these media people.
Oh, and smooth the lens.
Speaking of charming the media, and I'm going out on a tangent here a little bit, but we've had some incredible coverage in the Chronicle in the past couple of weeks. I mean, the editorial part, the news,
the big editorial.
And then, last week we talked about this, the City of Tolerance editorial. And then yesterday, the Chronicle did a op-ed piece by a reader's representative, James T. Campbell.
Yeah, you know who he is. You know what he does.
No, tell me.
Okay, reader's representative is a guy that sorts out the letters to the editor.
Sort of the ombudsman.
Yeah, he's sort of the ombudsman. Yes. I mean, these people are saying these things, and we need to make space for them to be heard, kind of guy. So he's a very important man in the culture of radio, of newspapers. And newspapers still make a different kind of culture. Print media is just amazing. And he is in a position, and his observation is right on point for who he is and what he does, which is, wait a minute, all of these gay stories are not special stories. These gay stories... gay, lesbian, transgendered, all of these stories. And I think it's very ironic that he took off on the Sergeant Oliver story, which is a transgender story. He said, this is not freak show media. These are people.
Yes, exactly. And when I read that story, I was like, wow, this is an interesting... Not only is it an interesting story, but the fact that how the story was treated. Mm-hmm. And even more so that, from my understanding, within the Houston Police Department, this was not
the freak show that it would have been 10 years ago.
Well, see, I've watched that evolution. I mean, I am that trained eye with the, you know, the mechanical lens that you see on these things, that I watch the cops like nobody's business. I keep an eye on everything that they do. People call me from jail and tell me what's going on. Insiders in the police department call me at home and tell me what's happening really behind the scenes and the curtains.
I'm sure it gives the NSA some good listening.
Oh, absolutely. And it's very educative for them too.
Yes.
You know? because you know, just think about it. I mean, we give some people in our society guns and badges and permission to take liberty away from the rest of us. And that is an awesome power, and a lot of people get drunk on that power. And so I keep up with it. I mean, everything from police scandals that don't have anything to do with gay people to police scandals that have to do with racism, police scandals that have to do with the money, police scandals that have to do with overtime, and all of these scandals, I keep up with that. And I'm the guy that nobody knows is calling Lois Lane, or specifically Steve McVicker, or Alan Turner, and saying, here's your story, and here's where you go, and you open the box and you'll find it.
Well, and I'm on the benefit side of all the hard work that you did over the years. When I work on the parade and deal with the Houston Police Department, not only do they are incredibly professional in the way they run run the security of the parade. They don't run the parade, they run the security part of the parade. That on the day of the parade, I was being introduced to their bosses and their bosses' bosses. You know, they're out there having a, you know, their
people you deal with have got commanders. It's a command control situation. And the captain of special ops, she is special to me. I mean, I've followed her career through that, and she's a tough lady, and she's got a tough assignment. It's not easy to be the captain of special ops.
Absolutely.
That's not easy, because what happens if we're having the Gay Pride Parade and they're having some kind of shindig down at City Hall and George Bush decides to come into town? She's got to be able to allocate her resources to make sure that all of those events happen without incidents and insecurity.
And she has a budget to live under.
And she has a budget. And she inherited that from George Bunick. And George Bunick left the house in order. And he is now an assistant chief over whatever he wants to be over now.
Right, and not to say that everything is wonderful. We still have the crime labs problem that
crime lab problem. Actually, you know, that's really not HPD problem. That is really a Chuck Rosenthal problem. But Chuck Rosenthal has hidden from this, because it wasn't HPD that picked up the telephone and called the clerks in the crime lab and say, you have to testify so I can get a conviction of that. That was an assistant district attorney, or maybe even Chuck himself. That whole scam, and it was a scam that operated for a decade and a half that we know of, maybe before, that whole scam was done by the Harris County District Attorney's Office, and so far they're unscathed. You know, they carried out and crucified Clarence Bradford for that. And Clarence Bradford, the only thing he did wrong is he was visible. He was out there talking to the media, and so he was the only target that they could shoot at. And no, that actually Steve McVicker will write that book, but I'll whisper in his ear a lot to make sure that he gets my perspective on that.
Well, and you go back quite a ways with Steve McVicker.
Steve was the news director at KPF, this radio station, when I was general manager.
Actually, he worked here twice. The second time, very briefly.
But the first time he was my news director, and he did a wonderful job. I didn't require him to do, I didn't even require him to do a story a day. I said, you know, when you got a story, when you get it cooked, we'll run it. Otherwise, you can cherry pick what's out there.
Well, KPFT is a much different animal than today than it was back then.
Well, the world is a much different
animal. Yes, that's true. That's true. I mean, we have the technology is just incredible how it's changed, whether you're, you know, taping the parade.
And more is
or
coming.
Yes. And at the same time, though, you know, there's all types of talk about keeping the Internet open and fair.
Sure, we have to defend it.
Well, exactly. I mean, you listen to Democracy Now!, they cover a lot of those subjects.
But when we get to digital radio, and that means that radio is going to be proliferate You're going to be, each of us three sitting in here, are going to be able to have the radio station of our liking and draw the audience that we can.
Well, but you know, there's 500 channels on digital cable now, and there's probably only one or two that you want to watch at a given time.
That's true.
The reality, I think, of, I mean, it might be good for public radio, for like KUHF, because they can have a channel that does all the news NPR programming, like Fresh Air, and then the other channel can do the classical music.
Well, what it means for the listener is the listener will be able to live in a media environment of their choosing.
I hope so.
If you want to live in a world where Jesus, Peter, and Paul, and Saint John the Divine come by, and you have chats in your living room, you can create that illusion with both radio and television, with electronic media, and get really sick about how this world works.
That's a scary thought.
It's true. And it's true. And there will be people that do that, that will recreate in their upper middle class living rooms in Woodlands and in some other place. They will create a nomad shepherd society.
Well, I mean, that's happening now in the sense of Fox News. I mean, you go to, like, my parents' house. I go there and they're watching Fox News. And a lot of my friends' parents' house, they, you know, it definitely is an old...
Do they not know that this is all lies?
I don't think so. I think a lot of people, well, because the way it's preached, you know,
this has happened before.
You and I couldn't agree on talking points.
We're friends. And we're covering the same subject from the same side. But we couldn't agree on talking. But they just universally
Right.
And I learned that when Clear Channel first started firing the senior people.
Mm-hmm.
And they went, in addition to being Ray Hill, super queer, ex-convict, Pacifica person, I'm also the go-to guy around here about media. I mean, if you're young and you got a great voice and you want to get in radio, you call Uncle Ray every once in a while. How do I get my career? And so I gathered all those people together, and I said, look, when Clear Channel gets all these properties, they're going to fire these older guys that have built up a lot of seniority and making a lot of money because it's cheaper to replace them than it is to pay their retirement. It's true. And so all of a sudden, here went Stevens and Pruitt and all these other people in radio just falling like flies, because they had too much seniority, they were making too much money, and this is a bottom line kind of consideration. So I said, get your ass to San Antonio and go to the Clear Channel school. So they all run over there, and sure enough, they all got in school because they had great voices, whatever. And then they called me and said, we can't do this. I said, what do you mean you can't do this? Well, you know, the only thing that we're learning here is how to ridicule Democrats at every song break and every news break.
Well, and it's interesting. I mean, when I moved here a little bit over 25 years ago, I went to a music radio station that I worked, a commercial station. They had two wire services there, and they had the weather service, wire service
there. Newsman that
and, right,
you
and,
wouldn't believe.
Right, right. We didn't always agree with him, but he was a nuts and bolts.
He was a sweetheart to me.
He was a nuts and bolt newsman, and you go to one of these radio stations now where there's four or five stations in the same
building
cluster there, music stations, they don't even do news anymore.
Across all of
and, you know, you also look at the TV news, the commercial TV news that's done in the city, and it isn't really news. You know, it's the blotter report for one thing.
But it's the box that came in.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not the news. It's not news, but it's the wrapper in the box.
You know, and this sort of reflects something. And I mean, I'm not just praising the Chronicle, but, you know, you really do need to read a newspaper. You just can't get all of your, you know, whether you read it online, you need to read a newspaper because there's more information about what goes on in a city.
Same Pete Seeger said that this morning.
Yes, on Democracy Now.
On Miss Amy, yeah.
Right, and Jesse Jackson, who has a show on KPRC on Sunday, Buried on Sunday Morning, he was actually doing it from Houston because of the Essence Festival.
Sure.
But a couple of weeks ago, somebody called him up complaining, well, I got fired. You know, I could get fired for my job. Because I'm gay.
Yeah.
You know, I work for a gay organization.
Sure.
But there's no protection. But somebody was complaining about, you know, getting fired, and Jesse turned to me and says, well, are you a member of any civil rights organization?
Yeah.
And this just confused the person. And, you know, maybe you don't like the political caucus here in town, but you can join HERA or you can join HRC. But, you know, how can you expect us to defend ourselves when we're not invested in one of our own civil rights organizations.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I was having this conversation with Sally outside. Someone calls her and it's immediate panic. I got to have help now.
Yes.
Yada, yada, yada. That conversation. Well, the fact of the matter is that social services, we're a community. And as a community, I remember when we weren't a community, we became a community, incidentally, for those of you who want to make notes, June the 16th, or was it the 17th, 1977, when Anita came to town. We marched down there, angry individuals, and we came back a community, and we started building the institutions that sustain a community, and those institutions now have evolved and changed and become different things, but the community has evolved and changed. But we are a community, and I come from a couple of labor goons. My mother tried to organize nurses for the Teamsters Union, and my father tried to organize shipyard workers for the AFL-CIO. If you want the benefits, you joins the union. That's not real complicated. If you want to work a 5-day work week, a 40-hour work week, and you want to have paid vacation, you want to have medical health care benefits, and you want to have survivor's benefits, you join the union, because that's where those things come from. They don't drop out of the sky because the boss loves you.
We're talking to Ray Hill here. Ray Hill has been a longtime activist in the community. And this is Queer Voices. Well, exactly. I mean, the Congress cannot pass a minimum wage that has, you know, in 20 years.
You're an only child.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I have two siblings, a brother and a sister.
And they're
the oldest.
He's old. You're the oldest.
I'm the oldest.
Okay. And I'm an only son. All right. I don't have any older brothers. And the article came out today that, aha, there's a disproportionately large number of homosexual men who come from families with older brothers.
Yeah, I read that, and then they you know, I just...
Well, see, I didn't have any older brothers, so I had to borrow the older brothers from neighboring families, but that was a whole fun thing.
Now I know I have an older brother. I always wondered what my problem was.
That's what it's all about, you know.
I had an older sister. I wore her dresses.
Yeah, you could save a lot of money that way.
That's right.
But now, these theories, and I want to say something about that while I'm at it. I mean, why do we have to keep trying to come up with the excuses that we're gay?
Right.
Why do
just accept it.
Yeah. Why do to me, it's kind of a subjective thing. I don't have to justify my existence. I mean, what if I did really and truly choose to be queer? What the hell's wrong with that? And what the hell is that your business? Why are you trying to run my life?
And who would choose it, knowing all the pains and difficulties?
Well, there's always that. But you know what really brought this home? What really brought this home is whenever I woke up one morning, and this is early in my understanding of transgendered people. I woke up one morning, and I said, you know, my transgendered friend, Phyllis Fry, doesn't need to have an excuse to be transgendered. That's just none of my business, and she doesn't have to carry that burden around on my sake. I love her like she is. I love her spouse, Trish, like she is. What is the damn problem with these other people who are worried about who wears a skirt and who don't? It's none of their damn business. And nothing in that would allow the justification for compromising their equality, their dignity, their liberty, their security. I mean, it's time we got out of this business of witch hunting.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. That's exactly the way I have always felt. And you know, I was interviewed this week by Fox News, and they asked the question about being transgendered, and I took it from the perspective, I said, why would anyone choose to be transgendered? Because of all of the heartache, headache, the fact that you will possibly lose lose all your friends, your job, your family.
Many folks do.
And the cost of becoming, in my case, a woman is exorbitant.
Yeah.
So why would anybody choose that? It's just who I am.
And you know, gay people and lesbians have looked upon other aspects of the community with the same suspicion that they were looked upon in their struggle mm-hmm. for equality mm-hmm. and dignity and liberty. And you know, but from my perspective, I'm 65 years old. I came out when I was 18 years old. I was going through my papers the other day, and the earliest writing that I could find with a date on it was about 1966. That was 40 years ago. And the first thing that I wrote was, we need to do away with the criminalization of private, consensual, adult sexual behavior.
And, you know, speaking of that, your friends from the bookstore came over the other day to pick up their award, and they mm-hmm. were telling me about their opening a store in Freeport.
Mm-hmm.
And you've been part of that. And
I'm having more fun with the Freeport
yes,
District Attorney
yes,
down
I'm
there. Bless
sure
her.
Have.
This is not our first time around. And as a matter of fact, I was in her office, and she was just running on serious uptight. I mean,
her
body language was just screaming, help, 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 what am I doing here? It's my office, and this man's in control. And so I was talking to her, and I said, well, you know, we've encountered before. And she brought up a case that I hadn't even remembered. But I said, well, there was another time. And she brought up that case. I didn't have to define it. She had been tracking me for a while. But, you know, you get off in these burgs like... and she's got a political problem. Because I don't think that she's a religious nut, but she depends on religious
yes.
nuts to
mm-hmm.
get elected.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand her problem and all of that. But the same token, the part of the oath to be a prosecutor is you take an oath to defend the laws and the Constitution of the United States as applied to the criminal law, and you take an oath to see justice done. Now, that's the oath that she's operating under, and that's the oath that the high sheriff of Brazoria County is operating under. If they'll just get that out and brush up on it, everything's going to be fine in Freeport. And I love that part of my work. They're doing documentaries. I'm getting a lot more documentary reaction about the prison stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But there's beginning to get some recognition of the gay stuff, which I think is really where I have done most of my most important work. But you know, that First Amendment stuff's pretty hot stuff, too.
Yeah, but you're probably more a pioneer in the prison stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and nobody's there. I mean, if you don't zero on him, because Dr. Carl Menninger, who was certainly set the pace on that, is dead, and you can't turn to Chuck Colson for prison reform. He just wants to save your soul and get your money. So I'm in a wasteland by myself, but I certainly enjoy all the attention.
Oh, I'm sure. I know you do. I you'd call me up and let me know about all that stuff.
I try to network. You know, mm-hmm. I keep up with former host of this show. I mean, I talked about Greer Price tonight, and he's somewhere in New Mexico going through bags of bones trying to figure out what kind of society existed there 12,000 years ago. And I saw Larry Bonnerice on the parade ground.
Oh, well, I didn't know he was in town.
Yes, of course
okay.
he's in town. He's not going to miss that parade.
Well,
that
was he has
baby.
His hands full in New Orleans.
I know he's got his hands full in New Orleans, but he will slip over here. He grabbed me about the curve.
I'm a little bit upset that he didn't come and say hello to me.
Well, of course, Larry, this is Larry's excuse to be a guy from out of town.
I know. And I'm still learning. This is only my 25th parade.
It's only 25th parade.
Yeah.
Good God.
So we move forward in the community, and we still
Well, let me say this before we move much forward. Jack Belinsky.
You don't have to go into...
Jack Belinsky took the parade, really, when nobody else wanted it, and it had gone through some hard times. And I think a conversation on his occasion of doing that is, Jack, remember, the key to this thing is inclusion. And there is not anything happening in this town that is more thoroughly inclusive than the Pride Week activity. It requires hundreds of volunteers. Jack doesn't pull it out of a hat. All he does is stand in point most of the time. And he's
got to get out of the way.
Get out of the way and let the board make decisions and anguish on the decisions that others make to try to implement them.
You know, one of my favorite scenes is from the movie Animal House, where that parade's going on in that city and the whole thing just falls apart and one float comes in from the side and just invades the whole thing. And you know,
that happens in New York regularly.
Yes. It doesn't happen in Houston.
But you know, the thing about New York is I think this is a Garrison Keillor line, and Garrison Keillor is talking to somebody, or it may be a John Stewart line, where he come up with the idea. Do you realize the entire New York economy is based on parades?
Yeah. Well, God, you know, yes. It's interesting the fact that Houston hosted the Essence musical conference, and there was also, besides music, from my understanding, there was workshops and stuff, and they were talking about how much money is being brought into the economy, and that's great. At the same time, it was also mentioned in the editorial that the Pride Parade does that too. Mm-hmm. Maybe not quite that scale, but we certainly bring in.
Well, we draw those queers from where the water comes from. They follow the rivers down, and a lot of rivers meet the sea here near Houston, and those queers come down to Houston and they go back to Crockett and Lufkin and Coleman Hill, where my new play is set in Coleman Hill, Texas, and that's my next project.
Is this the preacher
religious
play?
Stuff, yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to Williams College in near Springfield, Massachusetts for the next 2 weeks. I'll leave.
Nice time Thursday. Of the year to go up there.
Sure, get away from the sun and the heat down here and get the rain up there.
Yes.
But I'm a fellow at Williams at the C.S. Lewis Institute. That's pretty highfalutin stuff for me, all that mortarboard stuff and black robes, but I'm going to work on the script of my new play, which will open next year in Philadelphia. It's The Miracle of My Unbelief. It's about my struggle from being a teenage Baptist evangelist to the heathen that I grew up to be, to make my mama proud.
Well, that sounds really interesting. How long does it take you to put one of these things
together? About a year.
Really?
Yeah, if you're now that I'm serious about it, I can sit down and tell you the stories.
Yeah, I know that. Without, you have.
And you know most of these stories. But to put them together so they work together with a plot and follow the intrigue of drama. And God, Jack, I love it. You know, I've been retiring from things. I've retired from active involvement in the gay and lesbian transgendered political movement. And Jennifer just basically came in and saw my footprints and has taken over some responsibilities in that regard. I've retired from gay media. I'm a guest here, and I only come down and pester you when I'm invited. And I've planned a retirement from the prison show, because what I'm going to do is I'm going to write and I'm going to perform. There's nothing to me that is more rewarding than that connection between a performer and his or her audience. It's just magic.
Well, the theater is great. And you know, whether it's live theater or theater on film, to be able to tell the story. And, I mean, you know, we were talking about the Garrison Keillor movie earlier.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's nice to see the behind the scenes of sort of what, well, it's...
Well, do you and I know what the behind the scenes are? And because we're in this business, and you're sitting out there listening to the radio, if you haven't been down here to see this mess, I mean, there's confusion, there's blood on most of these walls, and you know, and we leave here crippled and all of that. It's hard work for us, and we're not getting paid the $25 million that Rush Limbaugh is
making. No, but the one thing that we can say about Pacifica Radio is they don't come in here and say, you got to do this and you got to do that. No. They leave the editorial control up to
the
programmers.
They may be cringing at home this very minute,
well, actually,
but we will not know it.
Well, the reality is they're so busy arguing with each other that they're not paying attention to what we're doing on
that
there.
That is liberal organizations, not just Pacifica. You think they're trying to impose don't talk to the media to the ACLU staff right now.
God.
I love y'all, and I appreciate y'all letting me come and play
well,
the radio.
Well, thank you for coming on. And,
thank you.
You know, we
just love you.
We appreciate all the work you've done over the years and sort of set the pace. And I was talking to, actually, I was exchanging emails with Tammy Wallace about some of these stories in the Chronicle, and I said, you know, that you know, Ray Hill and Phyllis Fry helped set the stage on this. But
We're working on a biography. You knew that. Doug Keddy and Phyllis Fry and I are working on a three-part biography. Each of us are going to write our own short autobiography.
Great.
And the appendix is going to include, among other things, the report from the Conference on the Future. And so we're going to have the gay agenda in the back of our book that should sell a few copies. But Phyllis's story is fascinating. Doug Caddy's story is incredible.
Well, and we had Phyllis on here a few weeks ago talking about, you know, the fact she was elected Grand Marshal, which we're very proud of, and she was elected by the city, not by the Pride Committee,
right. People,
and the background of the stuff, she's the law journals that she wrote, and the, you know, she was, you know, way out in front on this to be able to do that, and the fact that we have a very active transgender community here in Houston.
Probably one of the most active in the country, and probably I always, because I get around, I'm involved in the movement as an observer on the national scene, and town meeting one, which was Pride Week's activities in 1978, that was the creation of the transgender movement, was the resolution about work clothing requirements. And it was the only thing we debated, and it carried. But a week later, you asked them what the conference was about, and it was about dress codes for employment. That's what, because we debated it, everybody remembered it. And if you can open up your first round of shot so that it becomes the memory of the box you came in, that's a good way to start a movement. And but there's some incredibly talented people doing that work.
And we lost a lot of the people that done some of this great work.
Well, that's why we're writing biographies and we're making documentaries, is because in the memory of that, I mean, Art Tomaszewski in this very room, you and I, and
Mike Misch.
Mike Misch in this very room. The most amazing thing. Now, I'm not a guy given to hocus pocus. I mean, I'm a non-believer. I just don't believe that.
Yeah, but somehow that last week in June is the perfect week to have a parade because it doesn't rain.
That's right. It's well, that's your deal with whatever's out there.
Right.
But I remember...
The power of the universe does that for you.
When Mike died, we had a hard time deciding when to scatter his ashes in the garden. And there was a lot of discussion because we had to get several programmers together. He was an institution within the station. And we went out of the backyard and we scattered Mike's ashes. And I came in the station next morning and I looked up and 50 bright yellow daylilies had popped up in the backyard that did not exist the day before. And they only lasted one day. And I was so emotionally affected by that, that we scatter Mike's ashes out there, and the next day here are these daylilies that are a foot and a half off the ground. I mean, they've been laying there under the ground waiting to pop up for I don't know how long, and Mike's ashes brought them to fore. And, you know, I don't believe, but it's pretty serious things to think about.
Well, it is time to end the show.
Thank you so much, Ray.
And Ray Hill, a longtime activist, prison program show on Fridays at 9.
Here Fridays at 9 on KPFT. I'll be missing the next 2 weeks. We're going to be dealing with sex offenders. And if we had not done the work for the gay community that we did over the last 30 years, we would be registered sex offenders just like the rest of them. But our work has saved us.
We'd like to thank our guests tonight, including Ray Hill, Mitchell Kateen, who was on a little bit earlier.
Sally Huffer with Montrose Counseling Center.
And Tim Overbrook with the Community Center. So we'll be back next week.
Absolutely. And next week I'm going to have a reporter from Fox News to come on, and we're going to ask about the media and the GLBT community.
And you're listening to Queer Voices. We'll be back next week.
Good night.
You have have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Networks station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles, and J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, which is produced in Houston. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Joan Devlin, J.D. Doyle, Glenn Holt, and Jack Valensky. For more information about tonight's program, including links to websites and organizations mentioned during the show, visit queervoices.org. And you can send email to jack@queervoices.org. Be sure to listen to KPFT every Sunday morning starting at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. And don't...
All KPFT will hold an election to seat delegates on the local station board. There will be separate but parallel elections for both listener and staff delegates to the Pacifica Foundation's five local station boards. Board delegates are elected to bring diverse grassroots voices from the community into dialogue between the community and the station. Candidates are chosen in both listener and staff pools. There are two ways to qualify to vote and run. Listener candidates can contribute at least $25 to a foundation radio station. Volunteers can complete 30 or more verifiable volunteer hours at a foundation radio station.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.